This is what the Farm Progress Show is all about. This is seeing the latest in technology related to agriculture and technology that might be just coming to agriculture.
Ladies and gentlemen, farmers, ranchers, and distinguished guests, thank you for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast, where we discuss the latest ideas, methods, trends, and techniques available to help your farm achieve higher levels of farm profitability. The Farm for Profit podcast is co-hosted by Tanner Winterhoff, the Iowa Bankerman, and David Whitaker, the Iowa Land Guy, where in tandem, they will share their ideas and advice from industry experts. Thank you again for listening to the Farm for Profit podcast. Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long. And now, here's Tanner and David.
Gerenhoff, head of the class, no matter the crop. If you need a harvesting head, that's where you go to get theirs. Go to www.gerenhoff.com. What do you think about that as an intro, Corey? We just, boom.
Right into it.
Started off with one of the best header companies
right
in the world.
Face.
Tanner Winterhoff.
Corey Hillebo.
Farm for Profit Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Trying something a little bit different because we just got done at the Farm Progress Show and had a lot of fun doing a lot of things different.
Well, actually, everyone else just got done with Husker Harvest Days.
Ah, yes. Look at you and looking ahead in the schedule.
So hopefully you guys had a good time there. I don't know if we came or not. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
If you saw us, you'll have to let us know that you saw us. And if you didn't see us, sorry, you missed out.
Yeah. Lo siento.
But we saw a lot of new things. That's kind of why we're trying something new here. I think that's what Farm Progress Show is all about. We missed it. It's been a long time since it's been in Iowa.
Yeah, there was just a, like I said earlier to you off air, was there's a refound energy behind agriculture. It's an attitude. It just, you can feel it in every booth you went to, in our after party. I really like to see that. I think 2020, that COVID era, really put a dark place in people's minds and lives, and we're getting out and we're living again, and we're excited about agriculture. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I would agree. It was fun to see the listeners. It was fun to see these vendors. And that's what we're going to do in this episode today after we share our listener review, is we've got four conversations that we're going to mash up into one show. So if you missed it or you got too distracted watching us and you missed part of the show, we had some really cool people on our episode. So Sukup today, Corey, is our listener review sponsor. What do you know about Sukup?
I know they're the best place to go for grain bins, steel sheds. They're the head of store and ignore. Store now, profit later is their slogan. And I think the last few years, that's you could pay for a lot of grain bins, a lot of new equipment, a lot of land type stuff if you did that. And the best way to do that is with Sukup.
Yeah, that was probably one of the best testimonials that a person could give. Obviously, it was fun hanging out there, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of their products in the middle of this show, but I really appreciate them hanging around. Eric Britton, we don't think along the lines of brushing people off. We appreciate your episode, how it's respectable to others, and you can give us things to help our farms be more profitable. So thank you. So Eric, we thank you for being a listener.
Thanks,
all of our listeners. Tell your friends, your families, if you've got ideas for topics or guests, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. Send us a text message or a voicemail, 515-207-9640. So Corey, the first conversation that we are going to talk about today from the Farm Progress Show is from our longtime sponsor. We caught up with President of Gerenhoff and learned about how they've managed their supply chain. They've also talked about the technology that they've got coming ahead for their conversations. Then we catch up with a friend of yours, Corey, from FBN. You and Amal have communicated for a while.
Yep.
It was fun to get him on the mics. First time ever, I think.
Yeah, it was our first time having him on. I met him back in 2015 or 16 and had dinner with him and out at their conference, and it was great to catch up with him.
And then we jump into a conversation with Sukup, obviously get to learn and hear more about their paddle sweep and technology that they've got.
Bin safety.
Available, exactly, bin safety. And the last one is Corey's favorite.
Oh, yeah.
And the one he's been talking about for weeks is Ryse, R-Y-S-E.
Yes.
You got to go look at it.
So I call it wrong. It's an aerial ATV is what they call it. But I call it a drone that you can ride in, which is completely wrong because a drone is unmanned.
Yeah.
But hey, if anyone wants to sponsor us and buy Farm for Profit one of these,
you're not going to tell them no?
Come on, let's go. or just Rise, if you're listening, we'll trial this for you.
Absolutely. So listeners, bear with us on the transitions. We will make those as smooth as possible, but stick all the way through the end. Each one of these is about 15, 20 minutes. So yep. If you do need to skip ahead, if you've already heard one of these conversations, go right ahead. That'll kind of get you pretty close. So what do you say, Corey? Is it time to start those conversations?
Absolutely.
Let's jump into a conversation here with Gearinghoff Head. So, and Dave, introduce our guest.
All right. And I'm proud to introduce this guest because this has been a partner of ours on the Farm for Profit podcast. Gearinghoff, we have Bill Dickhoot. And, of course, Gearinghoff, head of the class, no matter the crop. We're talking Gearinghoff Heads. Where did you come from? You said you flew in.
Yeah, I drove in, but first I flew. That was last week. And thank you for having me on the show.
You bet.
Yeah, remind our listeners, they do know if they are an avid listener as to how far you traveled to get here. But where did you start from?
Started in Germany.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, all the way over from Germany. But according to the history, other conversations we've had, you were born in the United States.
I was born in Kankakee, Illinois, and raised out in the country in Chabance, Illinois.
Nice. Well, we got to hang out with a couple of your sales reps yesterday afternoon at the Gearinghoff booth. Dave, where are they set up at here?
If you're a listener here in live in the crowd here, booth 827. So from the Sukup building, you're going to go straight west, and you'll be over there. Also, if you want to check it out, Tanner, one of the cool things I saw on that sweet Fendt combine out towards the front, they got the ATF head. That's the one that does 75 inches of travel.
Yes.
It's out on that Fendt combine. So if you want to see Fendt or Gearinghoff paired together, mercy.
Yeah, it's articulated to get 75 inches of travel in the wings to better fit your fields.
Yeah, head of the class, no matter the crop, is not a lie. You guys are advancing the technology for the headers beyond that of any other company.
Well, that's what we concentrate on. That's what our customers expect from us.
And Tanner, when I think of Gearinghoff, I think it was something I didn't even know about. I thought, well, geez, John Deere combine, John Deere head. That's what you did. What I'm seeing is that everybody's going to a specific head of some sort to accomplish a goal for their type of soil, their type of crop. And what I learned from previous talking with Bill is that they can do that. They will custom make something for you if you want certain size rows, certain size head. And you guys have, if I remember right, the largest corn head?
Yeah, we have that at our booth. Please come by.
It's here.
Yeah, it's here.
Fantastic.
It's 60 foot wide. It's a 24-row, 30-inch North Star head.
Yeah, Corey and I went over and, like I said, hung out last night and stood at the throat of that head. And went, you almost need to have somebody riding in the buddy seat with you just to watch the left half of the head while you watch the right half of the head to make sure everything's running. That was a large machine.
Yes, and the machines are getting bigger. The combines are getting bigger. And, of course, you can't go down the fields 10 miles an hour, so you need to have a mouth big enough to feed your combine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great technology on the corn harvesting side, the row crop side, but you also have one of the largest platform heads in the industry, correct?
Yeah, we are working on our draper head. We've got an articulated draper, a three-piece frame. We have a 45-foot head here. We have it available with an air system, an integrated air system, and our draper head actually uses actuated wheels and controls to push the cutter bar down to the ground to get the lowest P's on the plant.
It's like shaving with a razor, Dave.
Yes,
exactly. That's why we call it the razor. Yeah. True Flex razor.
So of course, I'm in the auction world. I'm seeing a ton of used equipment come to market. Are you guys seeing a ton of sales, or what do you think? We got inflation, we got interest rates going up. What's your take on the market? How's Gearinghoff handling that?
Well, we've got, let's say, good pricing. I hope a lot of our customers have been able to lock in good pricing for their crop. That means that there's a need, a business need to get equipment, right? There's been a little bit of a lack of equipment sales or a lag in equipment sales the past years. So there was some pent-up demand. Currently, there are issues in the supply chain.
I was just going to ask that. So do you guys have enough supply? If my guy wants to buy your draper right now, can we make that happen for this harvest season or next season? Or how far out are we?
That's going to depend. This harvest season, it depends on how late you can harvest.
Okay.
Okay, so right now, we also have to be honest with the marketplace. We do have a lot of orders. We had a lot of orders last year. The trick is to, you know, be a little bit better than at getting the materials and getting the materials put together. So you have to have people, you have to have the parts, and you have to have the creativity every single day to make a plan B your plan of the day so that you can provide the product to your customer because that's what he expects.
Well,
he
Tanner,
expects to get his machine.
We're here at the Progress Show, and when I think Progressive, I think Gearinghof. Bill, what's next? What's next? What's the? Give us a little sneak peek into Germany. What's in your mind?
Okay, well, I mean, we're constantly working on being the innovators, and I think we're recognized. That's why we have partners in the industry that also recognize us as being innovators. You'll probably see some stuff coming out from the Nexat this fall, so I'm sure that'll be interesting for everybody. You'll see some stuff going on there. Also, the wider heads. We've got that wide head out there so that we can actually ask our customers, hey, what are we doing wrong? How can this work on your operation? So there will probably be some technology developed around that, as well as the AFT, articulated head. How do I get in my field with just one head and be successful?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's fun to be a part of a partnership. You know, like you said, you have a lot of corporate partnerships that are helping you advance the technology and advance the durability of harvesting heads. But also to be a partner with us on the Farm for Profit podcast, we can't express how much we appreciate that, but it's great to have a partner that is looking to progress agriculture just as far and as fast as we are, and we appreciate monitoring that in the industry. When you look at the economic factors around agriculture, how has demand shifted in the last 2 years? Are you still seeing pent-up demand for new products, or what are you seeing?
Well, there's pent-up demand, and a lot of that is supply-driven, not demand-driven to some extent, because there is exposable or disposable income that you can actually spend the money on new equipment. Mm-hmm. makes sense for tax purposes. But not everybody has been able to deliver. And so it's the question if you're able to deliver, and that's where somebody might say, okay, I haven't been thinking about getting a new head or a new tractor, but I can't get this other piece of equipment. So to spend my money, invest in my business, it makes sense to maybe buy a head or other piece of equipment that you might not have been thinking about this year.
Well, and you just said they can't deliver. I think, Tanner, the one thing I heard echoed here is honesty. We're going to be honest with you where we're at, what we can do, what we can give, so that we can deliver on every promise made, and that's what I'm hearing.
Exactly. And speak. We've got a good dealer network. There are good partners out in the marketplace. They help our customers be successful. And you know, if there is interest in a Gearinghof head, please speak with our dealer network or talk to us at the show, and we can steer you the right way.
Absolutely.
Or at other shows in the future.
That's right. And if you're listening to this on the Farm for Profit podcast, this segment will definitely provide you value, and you can reach out directly to us, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com, or visit gearinghof.com to locate that dealer next to you. But if you are here at Farm Progress Show 2022, it's booth 827. You won't want to miss the giant heads that are here on display. Bill, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, everybody that's listening.
So we are here with founder and CEO, Amal Deshpande. Is that
Deshpande?
How Deshpande.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks.
Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Good friend of mine. We had, I think, we had dinner, gosh, it was probably 2018 the last time Farm Progress was here.
Yeah.
Down in Ankeny. I'm an FBN member myself. So we're happy to have you, Amal. Give a little background about yourself and what you got going.
Yeah, well, I didn't grow up on a farm or anything, as you might be able to tell, but I got into farming through my dad, who worked with livestock farmers for many, many years, helping them with a lot of issues that then got me interested in the industry. And after graduating with an engineering degree, I didn't want to be an engineer anymore, so I asked my dad for help, and he introduced me to a farmer who had a very innovative livestock operation. And I got to go work on that, and I just sort of fell in love with the industry. And so decided I want to make a career out of it. My background's technology, but now I've kind of adopted rural America into my background. I like to say I've probably been to more farms or know more farmers than maybe anybody in the world.
Probably.
And
yeah.
That's an honor for me. I like it. As I said, I didn't think I would when I started 20 years ago, but now it's kind of become part of who I am. So
FBN, I think of as industry disrupting. And then once you disrupt, you have to lead. Would that be an accurate description?
We disrupt, you have to leave?
Lead, as in be the first one.
Lead, yeah, absolutely. Well, you have to, if you're going to disrupt an industry, you have to be willing to do things other people aren't willing to do. So as a simple example, when we launched FBN.com and said, would you contribute data? Would you be willing to consume analytics as a farm? Most of the people in the industry said that wasn't plausible. We now have nearly 50,000 farms on our platform. Similarly, when we launched our input business, the common feedback we got was, well, our farmer customers, they're going to prefer to buy local. And I don't disagree with any of that sentiment, but to be honest, if we have a better economic value proposition, we think we can win business. We now are one of the leading players in the industry from a size perspective. We have nearly 1,000 employees at FBN. We're growing very fast. So the technology, plus the willingness to innovate, is what creates disruption. You have to be willing to do it. And yes, you have to be a leader. Otherwise, you can't be a follower and disrupt people. Yeah.
I know when you guys broke onto the scene, I became a member, and you guys are blowing everyone out of the water as far as competitiveness. Probably something you did that you maybe didn't know was going to happen was you made everyone else sharpen their pencil, and get more competitive, which is good for the industry.
Yeah. Well, that was the problem we were solving. There's not enough competition. So if you're buying your inputs, whether it's seed or it's chem or anything else, if there's not 5 people competing for your business, 10 people, how are you ever going to get a better price? So just by virtue of us being in the market, offering lower prices, that forces others to bring their price down. That doesn't make us popular, but we're not trying to win a popularity contest. No. We're trying to reduce prices for our customers. And then we've had to continue to innovate. Our supply chain, we've gone upstream. We now own a lot of the IP that we deliver. That gives us a huge advantage in terms of offering value back to the customer. We're going to keep doing that because, again, it's not a popularity contest. It's about trying to help our customer save money or make more money.
So your FBN is doing a lot with technology and a lot with digital platforms. So what is something that you're really proud of that's coming and going to be a big focus of FBN going forward?
I think our finance offerings are I would say that's probably the thing I'm most excited about right now at FBN. We have a comprehensive suite of operating loans, farmland loans, equipment loans. We have ag input financing, of course. We've had that for a long time. And the technology we've built to take friction out of that process, help people get their capital that they need to run their farm more efficiently, but then also at a better cost. So again, whatever type of capital that is, I'm excited about it. We've gone from being not in the market to being an emerging leader in a very short period of time. And so I think that's the, if you came back 2 years from now and you said, what is FBN? Right now, a lot of people know us as data analytics, our community, our crop inputs business. I think people are gonna know us for our financing business just as much, because from what I'm seeing and what I can see even in our tent, that's garnering a lot of interest.
And it's going to force those standard community bankers to sharpen our pencils, too.
You got a competitor sitting right here.
Absolutely. But I see the digital side, the evolution of the farmer going that direction. You know, it would be a lie to say that a community bank and credit unions and farm credit services itself aren't looking to make those advancements as well. So it's good for the industry because you need something like that, a driver to progress the whole field forward.
No doubt. That always happens. That happens on the consumer side, too. It isn't as if companies like Square and PayPal or others are alone in the innovations they're trying to bring. I mean, large banks like JP Morgan, Bank of America, they have programs like Zelle, for example, where you can do money transfer payments. These technologies become pervasive. But again, as a disruptor, if you're the leader, then you can build a position in that, right? And that's really what it boils down to, is the willingness to go and do those things.
You said you had, 50,000 farms?
Nearly 50,000.
How many acres do you think that is?
Last I checked, it was over 100 million acres. I mean, we checked in North America, we believe about 17%, I believe, of the acres in North America are on FBN already.
So that's,
this is a surprise to people that don't know the scale, but I think it's actually that large.
Is that the fuel behind this, the data from that?
No, I think it's the members. A lot of our farmer customers don't even contribute information. They come and do a transaction with us. They come and buy crop inputs. They come and get a loan. Certainly, if you share information in FBN, you get a lot more analytics back.
Yep.
So things like seed genetics and seed selection or price transparency, and I encourage people to do that, but you don't have to at FBN. The membership's completely free. and the use of FBN.com at this point is completely free. So you can use it whatever manner you want.
And one of the things that FBN does, just like Amal was saying, is the network of farmers is what really helps drive this forward. And it says here that out of your farmer-based surveys, you guys are taking on crop protection. So what does that look like, and what are you excited about?
In crop protection, specifically? I mean, what we've done over the last 3 years is we've built a portfolio of intellectual property where we actually own the technical registrations in a lot of these ag chem products. What that allows us to do is taking an ag chem product through our own supply chain is huge potential savings for our customer. Because if you think about the way it works today, you have an owner of the intellectual property and they sell to a middleman who then resells it to a farmer. We're not only eliminating the middleman, we're eliminating the upstream intellectual property margin stack. We can share that back with our customer. We're investing tens of millions of dollars every single year in that. So I'm very excited about that because I think every single year there's going to be more and more coming to market. And that's one of the reasons we're growing as fast as we are, is we're sharing that value back with the customer. Unlike other companies, IP owners, we're trying to share the value we create back. And so what that immediately means for our customer is lower cost. And that's why we're winning business.
Tanner, I can tell you there's no better place to find labels for chem products or crop protection products than FBN.com. Even if people aren't a member, I know they're going there to use it.
Yeah, there's plenty of tools at FBN.com that people can use even when they aren't members.
They're totally free. Again, you can use every one of the data analytics products other than the ones that are contributory. There's satellite imagery for free, price transparency, the entire store, our market intelligence in terms of markets, so all free at FBN.com. And there's no obligation to do any business with us.
Some of the biggest issues we're chasing right now in agriculture is energy and how to get it and where to get it and what form. What do you guys have on the energy crisis?
I think it's one of the more, it's a major issue right now in the U.S. economy and the global economy. I think people don't realize how big of an effect it has. Oil prices are high because in the United States we're unwilling to or don't allow much drilling, which is arguably a policy mistake. And what it's done is created dependency on people we don't want to be dependent on. And that's not only a problem for the U.S., but it's a problem for Europe. So what's happening is you have massive spiking natural gas price in Europe. You have higher prices for all fuels in the U.S., and we don't have supply. So the supply side has been constrained by a combination of regulation and policy. So I don't think people have fully appreciated maybe how big of an impact this could have. There's a lot of potential for price shocks in energy right now. I think that oil prices could go materially higher. I think that gas prices already are very high in Europe. And again, we haven't allowed for the supply side to catch up. So it would take years, even if you became more flexible on permitting, it would take years to initiate that production. And that's a big problem, not just for the U.S., but for the global economy.
Right. When you watch weather, it seems like weather's been having more extreme events. And every one of these extreme events uses more energy in a different form or fashion, which just adds to the extra required load instead of a steady run across the entire process, to where it's been interesting. It's written and reported on across all the news publications that there is an energy crisis on its way.
But there is. Europe right now has one. I mean, European prices of gas are extremely high, and it's because they created a dependency for themselves on a country that was clearly going to be uncooperative, and then it happened, and now they don't have an alternative source. And again, meanwhile, the U.S., which has a lot of natural gas, for example, has oil too, has not made it easy to drill or permit, so we don't have the supply that we could be offering to the market. So it's a... it's an unfortunate consequence, but I think this will have an impact in the agricultural economy ultimately, because some of these commodities get tied together with commodities related to the food system, and of course it can impact the cost of your operation too.
Is there anything FBN can do to help?
I wish there was more we could do on that. For that is a hard one.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how to get a drilling permit or build an LNG plant or something, but it's probably not our business. What we can do, I think, is help with some of the analysis of it so that people are aware of the issue and can see how it might affect their operation from a business standpoint, because I think it will.
And you can help them, maybe cut costs in other parts of their operation to help soften the blow.
Absolutely. And with the things that are causing those issues, do have an impact on a farming operation, like the supply chain things you've seen with inputs. Many of you know natural gas is a huge input to fertilizer production, for example. It's an input to anything you manufacture. If the price of that is high, then the price of your goods is going to be high.
Yeah. Right?
And it's a costly input to manufacturing downstream from ag commodities as well. So,
well, this has been a great pleasure of ours to have you on here. Obviously, sitting here at Sioux Farm Progress Show 2022, let the people here in the crowd know where they can come find you and talk to you more, but then also if there's anything else you want to plug with FBN before we close out.
Well, we're at FBN.com. That's the website virtually, and as I said, it's free. I encourage anybody who wants to use the site to use it. It's easy to create an account, but we also have our tent over here, which is quite large, and I got about 30 of our team members over there.
Yep.
So if you ever want to learn more, just stop by anytime. We have a happy hour from 2 to 5.
Oh.
That might be the biggest plug of all, and I'm sure that that'll get some attention.
Free beer.
Feel free to stop by. Yeah.
I've got
come
two
one,
questions.
Come all.
Fire away. Two questions less. Is there going to be a conference this year?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, we're going to hold our Farmer to Farmer conference December 6th through the 8th in Omaha. We're doing it this year, and we opened the registration to our members, certain members, about a week ago.
Okay.
And we had something like 800 signups already.
It is one of the best networking conferences.
Yeah, I would highly, and it's free, again, for our members. I would highly recommend if you have time to come to Omaha December 6th through the 8th, that could be interesting. And we are absolutely going to do it. We just started announcing the speakers and the content.
And you probably need an exclusive podcast to be there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should talk to Charles about that. He's probably looking for that, actually.
Yeah. I got one more. Is there anything that's coming down the pipeline that you can share? What's next?
About FPN? Nothing that I can share, but what I can tell you is we are constantly innovating, and what we're, like you said, leading from the front on disruption. When we do something, it's going to be impactful. I mean, it's going to be a different way of thinking. It's going to be maybe incongruent with the way the industry does business, but it's going to be something that'll give bottom line value to our customer. That's the one thing I can assure you. We won't get into something where we can't actually save money or make money for our farmer customer.
That's great. Well, it's been our pleasure to have you take a couple minutes out of your busy day to hang out with us.
Of course.
And everybody here, if you want to ask Amal more questions, you can go find him at the FBN tent or reach out FBN.com. Correct?
Yes. Yep, awesome. That's right.
Thank you again.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Amal.
All right.
So it only took us 3 days, Corey, to get to the actual Sioux Cup conversations. We're happy
that's
to be...
That's not quite true. We did talk to Matt Cook the first day.
That's right. That's right. Yes. But we're more than honored to be set up here at Farm Progress Show 2022. We thank you for the invite. I think this partnership's turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah, excellent, guys. I think it's been great here the last couple days. Today's a little bit slower, but still a lot of interest in products, and really appreciate your guys' support on this.
So, listeners, this is the voice of Randy Marks. He's the Material Handling Sales Director for Sioux Cup. So, welcome, Randy. You were on down in Louisville for a little bit, right?
Yeah, really appreciate that invitation there.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. We're going to learn about, I would say, some of the most innovative grain handling equipment in the industry. And like Corey has said time and time again, the Sioux Cup relationship is fun because it just seems like not only are the products top tier, but the people are top tier.
Yep. And this show, I think, the first 2 days were packed and couldn't ask for better weather. What's been the most interest you've gotten on a product?
Okay, well, the most people come into the booth, our advertised paddle sweep has been by far the talk of the show. People are always coming in. We've done a very good job with our advertising team getting that out there so people can see that. They're coming in, they're wanting to know, learn about it, have had a ton of interest in places where they can put these in their bins and in their systems.
And why are people interested in a paddle sweep?
Well, the paddle sweep is definitely, it cleans the floor, right? So it gets right down to that hot cut or heavy duty perf floor that you got in that bin, takes all that grain to the center, so there's nothing left there for them to come in and have to shovel or broom or move. And obviously the safety aspect of that, so nobody wants to get into the bin, it's unsafe to get into the bin, so when you got a sweep like this, there's no need for you to get into that grain bin.
And I remember the conversation we had at Louisville that's one of the main focuses of Sioux Cup is safety. Safety of individuals. What was the saying? John said something like, you can't spell safety without Sioux Cup, or what? There's a saying that you guys have.
Safety is ingrained in Sioux Cup.
That is correct. Safety is ingrained in SUCUP, and we've got all of our safety features here on display at the Farm Progress Show. We've got the new safety door, too, that people come in and definitely had some conversations on.
Yeah, it seems like it's inevitable. It's every couple months you hear that tragic news of someone getting killed in a grain bin or getting injured even, and you never want to hear that because it's usually completely preventable. And so that's what you guys are trying to do, is make that easier for us to prevent. So that's I'm happy you're doing that.
Yes, and making people aware that there are those risks out there every day, and there's tools out there to prevent it.
Awesome. What about, I did want to talk about the paddle sweep a little bit more. So most of these, the conventional form of, what do you call it, just a grain sweep?
Yeah.
It's just an auger.
It's an auger sweep, correct.
And so that's where the safety comes in, because you're not in there pushing it. You usually have to broom and scoop behind it. But the one that you have in your bin in here looks like that thing stays in the bin, right?
Correct, yes. All the commercial sweeps, whether it's the farm commercial line, they all stay in the bin. We do have and offer a farmer duty paddle sweep that is a retrofit for people that have like a tube and well grain system. They don't have the gearboxes to hook up to. We have one that has a direct drive. It's got a reducer with a C-face motor mounted vertically in there to keep the cooling fins and everything dust free. It does require you to go in and plug it in. And then go out, turn it on, and let it run. So that's available. I've had a lot of interest in that as well here today.
So you can make your old bins safer.
Correct.
Great.
Yeah, that's a big plus. And it's fun to see the technology, because until Louisville, I had never seen a paddle sweep. And to be able to see it in person, it really demonstrates how technology is advancing even inside of a grain bin. When you look around the Farm Progress Show, and that's what everybody is touting, is what's the newest innovation? And it's fun to see that is happening at SUCUP through the grain handling. But we got to get the grain into the bin before we can use a paddle sweep.
Correct. That is exactly right.
So what are some new innovative ideas or ways that SUCUP is making sure that grain gets there?
So the newest product we have here today is our triple run conveyor. So it gets its name. It's got three basically different functionalities that we can use it with. We can use it for a single unloading receiving pit. We also have an option to do a dual receiving pit. So if somebody's got a semi-trailer, they want to dump both hoppers at the same time, they don't want to move that truck forward, they can dump both pits. It'll go from anywhere from 4,000 to 10,000 bushel an hour.
Wow.
And then the third thing that we can use it for is like a reclaim system. So even underneath your grain bins, or put it in front of a row of bins and dump into it and come up at a 45 or 30 degree angle to feed a leg or something, another option. That's why we call it a triple run conveyor, because it's got a lot of different uses out there. This is the first show we've showed this piece of equipment out here. So you'd look for the towers and the structures, and that triple run conveyor is right there for you to take a look at and kick the tires on.
I don't know if I've seen that yet. We're gonna might have to walk over there when I get done here.
I'm just thinking of our listeners are sitting there going, if they don't have the ability to dump both hoppers at the same time without moving their truck, or just jealous of the opportunity that somebody has to be able to dump both hoppers at the same time. And then the capacity there is are you seeing trends going towards more capacity on farm? Is there a lot more of the operations you guys work with trying to generate that extra level of efficiency?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I mean, every farm is looking at how they can become more efficient. So it's very expensive to have the combine sit out in the field and run and not do anything, right? I mean, those are a lot of hours on a machine that's very expensive to maintain and operate. So everybody's looking at how fast can we get trucks in and out of the field, make sure we're keeping that grain away from the combine, keeping that combine running in the field, so we're not putting hours on something that's not needed.
That's great. That it's almost safety too, having being able to dump both hoppers. You don't have to hop in that truck and move it, and ergonomics and things like that. So even though you probably didn't plan on it to be safety, it is.
We're right, yeah.
I know another question that we've gotten from people walking through, at least we've overheard them asking you guys, is there seems like a supply issue with a lot of different vendors. So how has SUCUP been managing the parts availability or these new products availability? Sure, I can see a demo, but can I get some?
Yeah, that's a good question. We've seen some issues early on in the year. We took some different approaches. So we've put we kind of got with our purchasing team. We had a lot of good orders early on in the season, so we were able to look at a scope 12 to 16 weeks out. We were able to start purchasing parts for what we're using, the steel that we're using, so we can kind of get ahead of that. Some of the supply chain, though, is still pretty tight today. Bearings, reducers, things like that can still hold us up, especially some of the larger items right now. But availability, most of our products, especially on the grain handling side, you know, a couple of weeks even, we can get some of those. There are some of them, like the triple run, some of those, we're probably looking more at that 6 to 8 week range. Paddle sweeps, probably in that 5 to 6 week range. So some of the items, just depending on what we're using, do get a little further out.
I think you guys make quite a few of your own material, right? So that probably has to help out a lot with the parts.
Yeah, that is one of the things that Sukup have done very well over the years. We try to control our own destiny, so to speak, by having control of what we make. So most of the things we make, but you know, like the bearings, reducers, there's some gearboxes that we use on some of the products that we don't manufacture. We do manufacture some of our own gearboxes as well, so those we don't have any trouble with, but some of those ones we purchase, you know, just getting some of those parts in them has been kind of a struggle for some of our suppliers this year.
And I don't think you're alone. We've had a lot of conversations here at the Farm Progress Show that there's been more of a focus on supply chain management and also building those relationships with your suppliers. Because that's what the farmers are doing with Sukup, is there's a trusted relationship there and you're expected to perform or at least to communicate in a realistic time frame.
Correct, yes, and that's what they want. They want to know when they're going to get their stuff. They want it to an accurate date when they're going to receive it. And those are the things that we're trying to get with our suppliers as well, that they're getting, hey, this is when we can get your stuff. If it's going to be late, is there a sub that we can go with, or how can we move forward so we're not delaying these products that need to be used yet this fall?
That's great. So why don't you tell the listeners where the next place they can see, maybe you don't know, where's the next trade show that they'll be able to take a look at the paddle sweep and the triple run conveyor and all the other great products Sukup has to offer?
Well, if they're not here in the great state of Iowa, we are going to be in Nebraska at Husker Harvest Days. That's going to be coming up, and I know that we're going to have a display in there where they can look at some of these new products and kick the tires on them if they need for a sweep in the bin or receiving. We'll have it all there for them to look at.
Any other new products that you can hint at maybe coming down the pipeline that we might be seeing in the next year or two?
Well, I know there's been a lot of talk about, you know, controlling fans and things like that automatically. I know there's things that we're definitely working on towards that direction. So those might be things to look us up at here in the near future.
Very cool.
That's great. Well, thanks again, Randy, for jumping on. Sukup, thank you for having us here at Farm Progress Show. If you guys want to find them in person, it's Husker Harvest Day, September 13th through the 15th. If you want to look up their products online, it is www.sukup.com. So, Randy, thanks again for jumping on.
Hey, thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
This is what the Farm Progress Show is all about. This is seeing the latest in technology related to agriculture and technology that might be just coming to agriculture. So our pleasure here is to have Mick Kowitz, the CEO and founder of Ryse Aerotech. That's R-Y-S-E. Welcome, Mick.
Hey, Tanner. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So what does Ryse stand for? Is that an acronym or is that R-Y-S-E?
I think we just kind of thought we wanted to rise up, do something different. But all the other RISEs were taken for the internet, and so we had to find a domain.
Hey, you're talking to the people who are farm for profit with a number four in the middle of it.
There you go. I know the feeling.
We get it. Totally get it.
So I am most excited about this one because this involves two things that I love, drones and flying. I don't fly myself, but I've always wanted to. So what does Ryse do?
So Ryse, we're actually not a drone because a drone indicates that it's unmanned flight. And we are actually manned flight. We're actually an ultralight vehicle in the Part 103 space. So there's a lot of different FAA regulations out there. Part 103 stands for ultralight, and it means your vehicle has to be less than 255 pounds can't fly faster than 63 miles an hour, and a single occupant, and it really has to stay in uncontrolled airspace is kind of the idea behind it.
Well, hopefully that doesn't include the weight of the operator, because I'd be out.
There you go.
At that point.
It's not.
Okay, good.
So for all you drone operators out there that are Part 107, what is there any other limitations? We're still learning about airspace. We're still having to be a licensed pilot then for Part 103.
You do not have to be a licensed pilot. Okay. You are an operator. In fact, Part 103 was written back in the early 80s, where Part 107 was written in the last few years.
You got it.
There are actually more pages of regulations to fly a drone than there are to fly in Part 103. An ultralight has 3 pages of regulations, which sounds crazy, but the idea behind the space was it was an innovative space where people could build their own, fly something lightweight that the only person they're going to hurt is themselves. And that's kind of the idea behind it.
Wow.
And so we built a vehicle that fits within that classification. Our vehicle is actually 285 pounds, and the reason for that is because ours also can land and take off from water. So Our added weight is associated with floats and outrigger units that allow us to stay afloat in the water.
Okay. Let's just back up. Right here. We just went from 0 to 100.
Yeah.
0 to 63. So I said drone, not because it's unmanned, but because it, like, what I want to picture is a guy sitting on this huge drone. Right?
Right.
And how are they operating this vehicle? I mean, or where did you come up? Yeah, let's go all the way back. Where did you come up with this idea?
Well, so we wanted to build an ultralight vehicle, and really it revolved around the farm and agricultural community. We wanted to build something that had a purpose. And ultralight logically made sense because when you build it, one, you don't have to go through airworthiness certification, you don't have to go through the maintenance certifications, and you don't have to be a pilot to learn to fly it. And that fits a lot of the bill for the agricultural community. So that really was the impetus for building an electric ultralight. Then we decided, what about vertical takeoff and landing? The space is kind of elevated. You've probably heard of some of the big companies that are out there doing air taxi. We didn't want to play in that because we really couldn't identify how the market fit. But when you look at agriculture and you think about crop scouting, about soil testing, about fixing your fences along your farm, finding lost cattle, reaching cattle that maybe are ill more easily, to be able to fly at 60 miles an hour as the crow flies instead of going through rough terrain on a vehicle and do it ecologically, you know, advantageous and environmentally savvy is a great opportunity for the farmer. And so that's what we set out to do. So the hard part was actually coming up with a vehicle that would be incredibly reliable to put a person in it, but then also meet all the requirements of the ultralight category, really the weight. And the weight is the hard thing, and that's where our secrets really are in the vehicle, is how we got to the weights and how we make it fly reliably, because it is a modern miracle to be able to do that.
So for our listeners, I need a picture of this, and I haven't even seen it yet. Is it like a quadcopter? Are we 4 propellers for vertical takeoff, and then they switch, or what's it? Give me a visual of what it looks
like. It's 6 independent propellers, so it's kind of diamond shaped. One in the front. Two on either side of the operator out in front of them, two behind the operator, and then one straight back behind them.
Gotcha. So I'm guessing this isn't your first entrepreneurial venture.
No. I mean, I've been involved in a lot of different things with technologies, artificial intelligence. I hold several patents in speech recognition that have been used in a lot of mobile technology you have today in your hands.
Gotcha. So then, now after you've done other ventures, you decide to go this way. Why agriculture? You could have made this for Uber, and we could have had little flying Ubers everywhere. Why agriculture?
Well, so one of the key components of the ultralight is the fact that you need to fly over non-congested airspace. So here's where rural comes in play nicely. But it wasn't so much about that. I mean, it fit the characteristics pretty nicely. But we wanted to build it for an operator who we knew would probably take care of it, be able to maintain it, respect it, and treat it like equipment instead of a toy. Someone who would use it every day. And farmers, ranchers, vineyard operators, they kind of fit that bill. So they were really the perfect first market because, one, they have cash, and two, they understand what the value in big equipment. And the first question everyone asks how do I cost justify? Tell me how I'm going to justify the cost of it. And we can share that with them. And from there, it becomes easy.
Do you guys have questions? Because I have so many and
keep
I don't
going.
Want to.
Well, that's a Farm for Profit podcast. That's why we here. That's why we're having these conversations
right, and
put it into perspective. Is there one here today at the Farm Progress Show?
Is there one? Yes, there are two here at the Farm Progress Show. One is in the demo field and it'll be flying tomorrow at 2 p.m. And the other one is in our booth where you can come and look and take pictures and check it out.
Tanner, they're going to need a pilot. I'm going to have to leave the podcast
if
for a second.
If I can fly a drone.
Listen, I can teach you in 15 minutes to fly it.
Totally.
I was going to say, if we can fly a drone, is it similar to that or no?
Very
no.
much. I had a reporter come into our office last week.
Yeah.
And I gave him 15 minutes, showed him the screens, told him how the sticks work, helmeted him up, hopped in it, and he flew.
We got to do it.
Hey, reporter.
Totally.
Yeah, you let a reporter do it. We got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I'm thinking is it's got to be electric. Okay, so drones are electric. I'm thinking battery technology immediately. How long is this thing going to last? Battery's going to die. What's my drone, Corey, yours and mine? We're 35 minutes.
35 minutes, yeah.
Something like that. We're going to go check cows and say we're 20 acres away or 200 acres away. Now we got a lot more power moving here, a lot more weight moving. How long does this thing last?
So it is about a 25-mile range. You're operating at 60 miles an hour.
Okay.
So you can get out. But the thing is, it is rechargeable, removable battery packs. So we have a fully weather-resistant station where you can have extra rechargeable packs, solar panel. So you can put them out in specific areas of your field. Go out, change packs, keep going, and move around.
So if I'm not flying at 63 mile an hour, we're talking about a half hour?
It is really, I mean, it's not really how fast you go. It's how long you're in the air.
In the air.
Okay. Now, that's intriguing. I'm glad that we made connections. We're able to put this on the podcast because I guarantee our listeners are sitting here with their minds racing just like ours as to where these uses could be. I know the only thing Corey wishes you could do is make it heavy enough, strong enough to where it can pull the grain cart.
I'm more thinking I want some tanks on there I can spray with.
There you go.
So we think spot spraying is possible with it. You're not going to do any big spraying with it.
Well, we had our fall ag technology episode that came out the Monday before Farm Progress Show, and we did talk to a guy that's been running drones and knows that the capacity is increasing, but it's still limited for how many gallons or how many pounds of cover crops you can carry. This, obviously, you already have to account for the body weight of the person.
Right, right.
Plus then the cargo that goes beyond it. What's stopping you from just making it more powerful?
Weight. Weight is your biggest factor. So where we're at is we're optimizing the weight. We're dealing with the efficiencies of the batteries. Those are the big things right now. But we don't really see it is a spraying vehicle. You know, we think there are other vehicles that do a better purpose of that. We really think of it as a scouting vehicle, a vehicle to be able to drop in where you need to be there, and you need to be able to do something, find the sick calf, be able to locate the fungus that happened to be on the crop. So unlike a drone, you can open the canopy up with this because there's enough thrust on it to be able to open the canopy, have high-tech imaging on it, be able to look down in, spot trends, be able to track that detail. We have an open API architecture. So if you've got a spot sprayer or if you've got some LiDAR technology or something along with being able to identify your yield, you could implement it and add it into our system. We could do the tracking, but you can be there with your eyes. You know, the camera on a drone is giving you really one dimension. It's you're only seeing what it's letting you see. But with this, you can look around, you can stop, you can move sideways, backwards, spin around in 360. You really have a lot more play because you're surveying, when you're flying, you're surveying more land than what the drone can really do for you. You're really splicing and stitching imagery together with the drone to be able to look at, but you're not really getting that personal feel. This adds that value to it. But again, I don't even know that I think that's the ultimate play for it. It's really being able to get to where you need to go and being able to physically be there.
See, you should get one of these, Corey, instead of a new side-by-side.
Oh,
there you go.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
So we have ranchers in Colorado who are traveling between 8,800 and 9,000 or 10,000 feet, and they've got to get up to open up the reservoirs. Well, they're on a side-by-side on the Ranger. It's 45 minutes up, 45 minutes back. With our vehicle, it's 8 minutes up, 8 minutes back. You're saving on the fuel cost, your body, and you're saving on the
time,
wear and tear.
Time is money, too. So
time is money.
That's not hard
a lot
math.
Of farmers ignore the fact that your time is because they think they're farming forever. But the reality is if you could get more time, you would take it.
I'm wondering, so Lazy JS, J Lazy S Angus, rather, went out and visited her. We went and checked water tanks up on the side of the mountain, and it took us half a day to get there.
Yeah.
Now, we were going on horseback, but if we were to fly up there, how do we land this thing? Is it, can it land on multiple terrains? I'm guessing a little bit of a vertical to it.
It can take a hill. It can take a degreed angle up to an 18% grade even.
Gotcha. Wow. That's a good question. I didn't think about that.
So it has all optical.
And the water.
It has optical LiDAR sensoring on it, so it's tracking you to the ground. It has AGL laser sensors on it. It's pretty. It's not like a drone. So the levels of redundancy, we have 6X redundancy on the pods. We have 3X redundancy on all the control systems in the middle. There's a lot that are of value to you as the operator to make sure you're safe that aren't there in a drone, right? And so that's really, you know, what we're trying to do is keep you safe and be reliable. And yeah, you can make that trek in no time much more easily.
So I'm guessing to get the weight, it's got to be carbon fiber or aluminum or something or some special alloy.
The frame's aluminum. The frame itself only weighs 40 pounds.
Okay.
And then a lot of carbon fiber Kevlar design. It's custom design that we've built for safety. A lot of compact spine compaction analysis for if the hard landing occurs for the operator. All those safety factors are taken into play. With the 6X redundant controllers and the propellers and the motors, if a battery, for example, fell out of one of the pods, it doesn't stop flying. That motor doesn't stop spinning. The other pods are all helping you because we have a high voltage bus that's taking care of it. If you're in a heavy wind, and you're flying, and your back motor's burning more power, the other battery packs are all helping keeping that guy level, so everybody is getting the right amount and the same amount of flight time for any situation, and it improves your efficiency in flight as well.
So does it have wheels on it? You said it can land on water. Is it wheels?
Well, wheels don't help in water.
I know, so that's why I'm asking. Does it take off? It takes off vertical every time and lands vertical every time, or does it forward?
No, it's a straight up and down.
Okay.
So literally, you could get in it and you would hit the high voltage enable, go on live, and then hit the takeoff button, and you would pull the stick back. It would tell you pull the stick back, and then it would say, "Are you sure?" You say, "Yes." Let the stick go to the center. It says, "Have the stick go to center." The second it does that, you can lift your hands up in the air. The vehicle takes off for you, stabilizes at a meter, and it waits for you and tells you, okay, continue on, you're ready to go. And it's going to maintain your heading, maintain your altitude, and maintain your control and your stability for you. Very high-tech intelligence built into the flight control system.
What kind of pilot interface or technology do you have in the, is it a cab? Would you call it a cab or cockpit?
The cockpit.
Cockpit. Yeah.
Really, it's a touchscreen tablet with the ability to use dial in case of cold weather, because there is cold weather capacitated touch along with dial control. And the joysticks are redundant for the tablet, and the tablet's redundant for the joysticks. So anything you want to do on the tablet, if it goes out, you can do on the joysticks. If the joysticks go out, you can still use the tablet to control you, just like if you have a DJI drone, you can do the same thing,
If you lose a motor, not because of power or battery issue, is it still able to fly with the remaining five?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, it's not going to tell you to keep going 60 miles an hour, but it's going to tell you to safely get to the ground. You can lose two and still get to the ground. But because there's six independent, I mean, unless you run into, you know, a bevy of geese, you're probably not going to have that problem occur. I mean, it'd have to be pretty catastrophic for you to lose more than one at a time.
He's thought of everything, because I didn't, one, think about a battery falling off or losing a motor, let alone flying into a flock of birds.
Yeah.
So we use NASA scientists to do our fluid dynamics. Our guys are all NASA aerodynamic specialists. They are also all guys that have worked in carbon fiber and air taxi, all-electric, high-performance eVTOLs and aircraft. We've got the right team building this.
So what? So with our drone, we got a 400-foot ceiling based on our airspace above where whatever we're flying. Is it the same ceiling? I mean, how high are we going up?
You don't have that ceiling, so you operate just as any aircraft does. Class G airspace, the safest. Okay. You can operate in Class E as well, and Class Delta and Class Charlie and Bravo. You just have to have permission. So if you wanted to fly into a Class Delta, you would just call ATC and say, hey, I've got an ultralight. I'd like to fly into your airspace. Here's where I'm going to be. And they give you approval because ultralights, many ultralights are just, you know, a Briggs & Stratton engine on the back of it with a push and a little, you know, parachute over you. They don't have radios in them.
So what's Delta?
Class Delta?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
How high is it? How high?
Oh, well, so when you get outside of Class E airspace, Class Delta, Class Charlie, and Class Bravo are usually shaped like birthday cakes in some way, shape, or form. Bravo. Class Delta usually extends up to 4,000 feet in just a cone, and it's okay. Usually a five nautical mile radius.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, like where we're sitting here, we're not too far from the Boone Airport, so we might actually be close enough to the airport
This is Class E airspace, yeah. But it's uncontrolled airspace. You can fly here up to 1,200 feet all day long.
Yeah.
So these demos that you're running here at the show, are you or one of your team members running that demo? Or
yeah, actually
are
one
guests?
Of our... No, we're not letting anybody else. The insurers don't... They frown upon that right now.
So how high are you guys going to go during your demo?
We're just going up because it's more of a photo opportunity. Hear it, feel it. So we're really only going 10, maybe 20 feet off the ground. We also don't want to impede on anybody else. They asked us not to impede on the demo area for Chevy and John Deere, who are right next to us.
I think you should impede.
Yeah, that doesn't go over well.
No,
we're trying to be good neighbors.
We all want to play nice together.
Right, right.
Now I'm thinking, and you don't have to answer this, but what are we? We're going to buy a side-by-side. We're 30 grand into that. This sounds very expensive to get there. Are you guys to market with this yet? Is it something that we can buy?
So we are going to be in market in second quarter 23.
Okay.
Right now we're through the prototype phases. So you'll see two different prototypes here. And we're actually flying the oldest prototype to show you how stable it is. And the newer prototype is prettier, so that's sitting in the booth. But we have the version 3, the V3 vehicles, are in pre-production and going out to our trial customers to really get the rigidity of it, make sure it's like a John Deere, that it can handle the terrain, mm-hmm. handle everything, work on the use cases with them. That's going to be going through the end of the year. And then starting in first quarter, we'll start building out, making the engineering changes, test it, and by second quarter, the production vehicles, which will be limited changes really, will be on the market.
So our trial one should show up here at the end of the year or so? For Farm for Profit, is that how that works?
Farm managers, think of this.
25-mile range. I think I could get from home to work.
And charge it up.
And charge it. I wouldn't even have to charge at work. I could get from home to work and back.
Could you fly in town, though? Is that...
You can, as long as you're not flying over heavily congested areas.
Yeah.
Like to fly over suburbs and...
Not
you know,
Duff Avenue at Ames?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're flying over Ames if you're... Like, listen, the FAA is going to tell you what you can do and can't do if you do too much of it. I was in my backyard in suburbia, a TPC country club neighborhood last week, and four ultralights flew right over my house, no more than 350 feet.
Huh.
No, I don't think anybody stopped them, you know.
I just fly at the level of traffic like I'm a regular car.
There you go. Like a hoverboard?
Yeah, it's like
a
hoverboard.
I mean, I think if you fly over the roads and you're in between vehicles, you might be able to get away with it. I don't know.
I keep thinking elk hunting season's coming up. Oh, and like
we could coyote hunt out of this
you
thing.
Can't go off-road with anything that's a motor vehicle, but if we're not touching the road.
Well, so you have to look at your county rules, especially for elk, because I'm a hunter too.
Yeah.
Elk season, a lot of places, you can't scout more than 24 hours in advance.
Beforehand. Yep.
So that is one of the issues, but I like the way you're thinking. For me personally, I'm thinking I got a lot of coyote problems occasionally. It'd be nice to be able to put my gun stock in the in the little holder on it, fly it out, and take out a couple coyotes.
I am in on that.
Yes,
100%.
I know.
But more people for a toy, but I'm thinking of like 10 different jobs I could think of that would use this.
Yeah.
But that's exactly why we're here right now. I'm not really here to sell to anybody. I mean, I know we're going to get some sales and people really interested out of it. I'm here to talk to the farming community. You know, I'm an aviator. I'm not really a farmer. I play one in my little 20-acre backyard. But what I really want is to talk to the farm community and find out, what do you think?
What's the need?
That's the first question I ask everybody. What do you think? What do you think you could use it for? How can we help you? How can we serve you?
Yeah. Well, this has been great. This is a fantastic little segment. I'm glad that we were able to connect, but if people want to learn more about RYSE, R-Y-S-E, where do they go to find you?
They can find us at RYSE Aerotech, riseaerotech.com. Pretty easy to find us. We're all over Instagram, Rise Aerotech, YouTube, TikTok, you name it. We're there. Twitter. We got places everywhere.
Is there any competitors in this space?
Good question. So there are other ultralights. There's three that are, I would say, funded like us. They're well-funded. And they're making vehicles. The one is going to be more of a sport recreation. It's very small. It's called Jetson 1. It's not really designed the way ours is for rigidity and the rugged terrain. Not really an aerial ATV. There's another one by a company called Opener called Blackfly. It's not really vertical takeoff and landing. And then the third is a company called Lift Aviation out of Austin, Texas. They're really working with military and places in first response.
Awesome.
We're telling everybody that MSRP is $150 right now.
Okay. Gotcha.
And if you ordered one today, you would get it in 23?
It depends. I mean, we're picking 100 to put them to right now.
And where are you at? Where's your number
We're way over it.
You're way,
So you're picking. This is like a lottery.
Well, so I don't want to use that term. We're trying to identify the 100 best candidates to get it to start with.
Barn for problem.
This thing looks big. Like, it's got to be 12 foot long.
It fits in a parking space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's under 12 foot. It's under 9 foot. And we're shrinking it down just a little bit to make it fit on the back of a flatbed.
So what if the blades break? Are they easily changeable?
The carbon fiber 6. Like, yeah, yeah.
How would you shoot a coyote out of that without shooting one of your blades off?
Good point.
You'd have to get to the side. You'd have to do it from the side. That's the way I'm thinking.
I can see things getting... Can you fly it one-handed?
Oh, yeah. You can. I mean, you can go hand... Listen, you find the coyote, you turn sideways, you take your hands off, it is locked. It is not moving from where it is.
It needs the drone technology of, like, where you pick
follow
out me. Your...
And
your,
follow
and
me.
Follow that coyote and then go autopilot.
We've already had somebody ask us if we can mount an undergun with a
turret. Oh, my God.
That's how you
Dave,
shoot
it. We need to go in on one.
You're going to get, I don't know. So what? Here's my question I got for you. You're in the aerospace engineering portion of the world. How far out are we to the Jetsons, if you will? How far out are we? Like, right now, everybody's talking electric vehicles where we're at 2022. I see in the next 5 years, people are talking that we're going to be 50% electric. When does it go to flight?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so first you got to do it on the ground, right? Yep. That's what everybody's looking for, because that's going to drive battery development.
Yep.
Right? The more people complain on the ground, because not your people who can afford, you know, one of the high-end Teslas.
Yep.
You know, you start getting into, you know, a different cost factor. People want more range. So batteries are going to improve, and I think that's going to factor in. Right now, air taxi is the big talk. Your Jobys, I'm blanking on some of the other ones, Lilium's, Volocopter. I don't think their market is clearly defined yet, so I think we're a bit a ways from that. This is really, you know, ultralight is sport recreation.
Gotcha.
We're going to spend a couple years really focusing on your industry, and then we're going to move outside of it, and we're going to go back to ultralights.
Cool.
And we're going to go back to the consumer market, people with large parcels of land that want to be able to use it. But we want to make sure we've got it really ferreted out with the community that I think will serve well, and they'll serve us well.
Perfect. Well, good. We're perfect. Out. You're we good? Did it.
Well, there you have it, listeners. That was four great conversations. I'm glad you stuck around with us all the way to the end. Corey, did you have fun?
I had a lot of fun. I tell you what, that Farm Progress show and everyone we met there, man, it's just salt of the earth people. Just great, great stuff, great information. Like I said at the beginning, the attitude behind the future of agriculture and where we're at right now, these companies are ones to get with because you're going to grow with them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Listeners, thank you for sticking around with us and growing with us. Again, if you have anything you want to send, farmforprofitllc@gmail.com. But until next time, have a good one.
Or text us.
Remember, if you aren't farming for profit, you won't be farming for long.